Chili Effect is sponsored by WallStreetWindow.com and listeners like you.
And now, the most underrated voice in all media, Chuck O'Shelly.
January 18, 2022, allegedly, according to that thing we call a calendar. And this indeed is the show you were looking for. How do I know that? Because you're listening to me talk through it real fast at the very beginning. Anyway, it is Tuesday, the second broadcast day of the week for the O'Shelly Effect. But, you know, it's an odd day anytime. Now, we have for years had the same person in this slot. But when it came time to dislodge him from that slot, I said to myself, what do we do with it now? Let's bring on a series of reporters, and I'll begin with one of the people that has been requested for a return, and also somebody who I just got to know only a couple of weeks ago. Addie Adds, who has been keeping track of, well, first of all, he was at the Ghislaine Maxwell trial, in case you didn't catch that show, and gave us a serious lowdown on what it was they were allowed to see on the overflow, how things were happening. He was talking to and confronting people on the steps there at the courthouse, which I found rather entertaining. I showed you where to go before, but there'll be a whole list of stuff to support and also follow the independent journalism of the guy they call Addie Adds. And I'll give you the Twitter, the Buy Me a Coffee, the PayPal, all that stuff, all right? Much as I can, because I want you guys to support the independent journalist who is out there doing the honest job. And Addie Adds is somebody that, again, I just recently discovered, but apparently, you know, other people were ahead of my curve this time. So more than happy, though, to have him back. And sadly, we're still having to, and I don't mean sadly because I'm talking to Addie Adds, but sadly, we have to keep covering the, let's call it the Maxwell / Epstein saga that continues to keep on giving the ugly of the ugly. Anyways, like I said, from the trial to now, we got to catch up. Addie Adds, how you doing, my friend?
Hey, Mr. O'Shelly. I'm doing great, sir. I was actually, as we just mentioned, in your neck of the woods there in Georgia, doing some follow-up work on election stuff. So, yeah, just, you know, trying to stay productive in this intro now. We got Maxwell sentencing on the 28th, but yeah, I'm doing great, sir. Thanks again for having me on the show. It's an honor.
Listen, it's great to get great stuff from people who are actually out there doing the work, man. And this is who you got to support. Again, take a look at the show notes, people, and do follow, listen to, and support Addie Adds, even if it's just the Buy Me a Coffee app. Every single bit of it will count, I assure you, toward what it is he's doing. So again, well, you know, the interim and the in-between, sort of, because we are confronted with the continuing story of what does this mean for Prince Andrew? And since you and I talked, somebody got stripped of their military titles. Gee, the lawsuit might be allowed to go forward. At least that was the last judge's decision I checked in on. Maybe I'm behind the times. Can you bring me up to speed?
Yeah, that is accurate. Judge Lewis Kaplan at the Southern District of New York courthouse dismissed the royal motion or rejected it to dismiss the civil suit submitted by Virginia Roberts Dufresne against Prince Andrew. So it will proceed. And the next waypoint there is the 14th of July. So another summer date there. And that's the deadline for both legal teams get their basically witness accounts. They want to maybe depose Sarah Ferguson, who's the ex-wife of Andrew, and possibly his children as well. And then on Prince Andrew's side, his legal team is led by this guy. His name is Andrew Brettler, and they are looking to call forward Judith Lightfoot is her name. She's the psychologist psychologist for Virginia Roberts, so they're going to inquire about her medical history, what prescriptions she is taking, and kind of going for that mental health angle, as well as the memory thing too, which they came out and said basically, you know, she may be suffering from false memories, which is a common argument here we're seeing We saw that in the trial with the money memory manipulation argument. But that's where it stands right now is, both sides for Prince Andrew and Virginia are going to try to get depositions and get those names submitted by the 14th. So not looking good for the prince. As you mentioned, he lost his military titles and as well as his Royal Highness title too. So in that sense, he is no longer officially in any capacity representing the royal family. So quite a troublesome spot the queen finds herself in with her favorite son at the moment.
Which is also strange because, as I said, I didn't predict that this was going to go forward. Look, let's just talk brass tacks about this, right? A legal tactic by anybody who is attempting to deflect and, defuse any situation that's coming for him, especially in the realm of legal consequences and civil suits, often what they will do is delay, delay, delay. And then by the time they're done delaying years later, either time runs the whole clock out or they say, look, it's been so long now. how does the witness remember? How accurate is this? And of course, they're going to attack the credibility. And on the other hand, again, trying to be as objective as possible from where I sit, I would say that you could say that Gouffray is a little problematic because of some conflicting statements possibly that were made. But the idea that conflicting statements are not part of the package that usually comes along with somebody who was truly traumatized is also, the thing they don't show you on the weekly cop show, okay? But that's the truth. So this is a mixed bag, but I was surprised, frankly, that, we got treated to the whole thing about him being served, what that means, there was the whole, was he actually served, was he not, and they tried to, tell him, notify him that he needed to somehow or another represent himself in court, again, because of the protection of the royal family that he enjoyed not only in title, but just in logistical, blessings or logistical privileges, let's say. It made it hard for somebody to serve papers on this guy. And there was some dispute as to whether the papers had gotten served and whether it was actually a lawsuit that could go forward. I mean, I'm surprised that it wasn't, one way or another just sort of tossed aside. Because generally speaking, elitists don't suffer real consequences for, anything they do, whether they have an HRH in front of their name or they happen to be, president for life, general for life. Whatever. Once you get into one of those positions where you have a position of power, first of all, almost nobody ever steps down voluntarily. But secondly, you're usually insulated from this kind of thing. So I find it remarkable in that it appears that the insulation is either rather thin or non-existent for this guy now. And who knows, we might get to the truth. Now, I want you to place that alongside of, and I might be jumping ahead here just a touch, but let's get to it and see what you think about this since you're covering this quite intensely. There have been declarations from multiple sources in the media in general that state that maybe, Ghislaine, I always got to stop myself from saying it the other way, but Ghislaine, she might actually be a little more friendly to the idea of, giving up some names now, maybe trying to deal with that sentence that she's facing, because you and I didn't even cover the sentencing, which again I found remarkable that she even paid a price, and she's not even part of a royal family per se. So, what about all that, Addy adds?
Yeah, that's some great questions you brought up there. Yeah, and likewise, Maxwell isn't officially a royal family member, but still is a benefactor of that elite status and the privileges that come with it. But as far as Andrew getting served, as there was some trouble initially with that before, as far as we could tell, it was able to get done. The names that have been mentioned and discussed over the past week, I actually just today realized that there's a bit of confusion about this. So that is with regards to the civil suit between Virginia Roberts and Ghislaine Maxwell. And Ghislaine Maxwell's legal team, in this case, Laura Menninger, who also acted as one of her defense lawyers during her trial, not just this civil suit, said to the court that they are no longer wish to protect the identities of John Doe's that are a part of that civil suit between Virginia Roberts and Ghislaine Maxwell. So it's not a part of the criminal trial, the criminal case against Ghislaine Maxwell. So just to reiterate, she is not cooperating or willing to cooperate with authorities in her criminal trial. That has not changed. But they've now said, Ghislaine Maxwell's team, that they no longer care, or more accurately, they're leaving it up to the court whether or not those names are going to be revealed. So
right now,
it's really in the SDNY's court.
I appreciate that clarity there. But the thing is, just again, for a point of reference, you're absolutely accurate about this. But here's what's relevant: the idea that if those names end up on a court record somewhere, they could be brought in as evidence. These are, you know, sworn statements possibly could be made. And those are admissible, say, in another case, possibly. I'm not saying that that this has anything to do with her criminal conviction, although when they do attempt to appeal sentencing and things like this, the idea that, hey, I gave up names or whatever after the fact could be a part of a consideration later. I'm not saying anybody's made that statement, but what I am saying is that this case, which is separate in reality from the others, if she makes these kind of statements, it could have effects on outcomes, not only in other civil cases, but even in exactly how her punishments are carried out. So, I mean, those possibilities are there, although there has not been a declaration to, you know, cut any sort of deal or anything, which if she had done that during the criminal proceedings, that might have changed the equation a bit for her, but she did not. So even with that said, when you're sentenced, you can have consideration for compassionate release, and maybe that adds to the record, and so on and so forth. I'm not even saying that this has come up yet, but it never hurts to stack the deck when you know you're going to wind up going to the casino later. All right. So there's that. And the fact that one case could easily affect another if you have a sworn statement issued in a courtroom under oath. Right.
Right. Right. Yeah. That's great points there that, you know, I wasn't bringing it up, but I just wanted to clear it up for the viewer. And in that sense, you bring up some great points there, especially if there's a mistrial and a new trial, you know, and in that sense, it's really, really up to the court here. I got to say, I'm not too hopeful about them revealing any sort of new information, names or otherwise. So, you know, I think the public at large, and it's going to, and I think it largely has been on the backs of the court of the public opinion to seek and get justice in this case. And, you know, right. I think it could be argued that the only reason these two, Maxwell and Andrew, are seeing any heat is because of public demand for it. So right. Will those names be revealed? I think that's a big question. And another one, which is still, I think, looming over the situation, but I think to a lesser degree now that we have an official sentencing date, is the possibility of a mistrial. So you know, this Maxwell trial, it just seems to be going deeper and deeper into overtime.
No, all good points. And the only reason why I offer all this stuff out there is because I'm trying to think objectively. I mean, if I were to share with you my sentiment regarding this, I'm amazed anything's happened. Okay, that's the truth. Even if it is minimal, I mean, you know, the slap on the wrist and the non-prosecution agreement that we saw with Epstein in the first place in the state of Florida, you know, that's the kind of thing I expected here. And it almost looks like, due to public outcry, due to the fact that so much has come out one way or another, despite the best efforts of the corporate media, okay, you know, it is the independent again, journalist. It is the independent media creators who have, you know, wrongly or rightly sometimes, made this a thorn in the side of the public's body or mind. You know what I'm saying? So it's been that insistence that I think has caused anything to happen, because otherwise, you know, most of the time, sweep it under the rug, forget about it. You know, these are upstanding citizens versus, guess who, people that maybe had some other problems, you know. Just because, and this is an absolutely offensive statement, Addy adds, but get ready for it. Just because a hooker is a junkie doesn't mean she didn't get raped, you understand? It doesn't matter, even the character of the victim, although people use it. Civil case, criminal case, they do use it. Everybody tries to dirty the victim. And, you know, defense attorney's job, try and make it look like your bad guy's not such a bad guy. And I'm not even talking gender here. I mean, you know, Ghislaine Maxwell, bad guy. Okay, just generalized term. So that's how I feel about it. Might sound offensive, but look, I'm not going to be dishonest. I'm surprised anything has happened. So back to this situation, though, with Prince Andrew and what's happening. You know, where do we go from here on this? Because this is a story that's going to keep on running. And I know that guys like you and also Marlon Ettinger, who's on the show, I know he's definitely writing about this often. You know, do you get any sense of what is not being discussed in general? I mean, we don't have enough time to go over what the mainstream's not covering, but in general, what do you think is being neglected here in the storyline so far as it stands? And then let's take it from there together.
Yeah, that's a great question. I would say, generally speaking, you know, mainstream media and independent media, the understanding of the deeper connections to intelligence agencies is one that, like I said, it is less understood, and because of that, less discussed. And like you said, certainly in the mainstream media, there was even an article in Slate talking about conspiracists at the trial on the fifth floor, talking about intelligence connections. But then this guy, his name is Seth Stevenson, I think, he works for Slate, doesn't inquire about them. He just kind of snarkily dismissed them instead of opening up, you know, discourse. So probably the intelligence connections. But one thing I didn't realize is even the mainstream media was having trouble with court access at the trial, with Julie Brown of the Miami Herald approaching the court administrator, and the court administrator immediately calling security. And all she was doing was approaching him to ask a question. So, you know, as poorly as the independent media got treated, you know, the mainstreamers didn't get treated that much better, although they were allowed into the courtroom. And one of them was, of course, the one to break the Jurygate story. So, yeah, I would say, you know, the deeper intelligence connections. One thing that is being discussed, which I think shouldn't be discussed, is people talking about Ghislaine Maxwell as being a victim of Epstein, which was said by a socialite in the United Kingdom, as well as Amanda Knox of the Amanda Knox murder case, saying that people are using this as a chance to vilify a woman who is guilty of sex crimes. So, you know, two instances, I think, of people using Ghislaine Maxwell's gender to make her more sympathetic in the public perception.
Well, that's very strange, because here we go, because I am rather liberal when it comes to the following thing. I pretty much figure that a scumbag's a scumbag, and I don't care what their genitalia is. Excuse me, but I figure equal opportunity there. Women can, if they choose to be, just as much of a piece of human filth as a man any day of the week. I think they're equal there. They have the same types of opportunities, even though they have slightly different equipment. Sorry. I guess I'm a little too liberal in my mindset. First of all, okay. Second of all, Amanda Knox, really? I didn't even catch that.
Yeah, it just came out. I want to say it was today, but it was very recent. And, you know, what her motivations are, I think, you know, it could be a bit confusing and maybe besides the point. But yeah, I just I saw that in two instances. I can't remember the name of the socialite, but someone who I think had been associated with Maxwell. So in that sense, maybe was trying to do some damage control after the fact.
Mm. Well, speaking about damage control after the fact, and I do mean as far as other people and what they had to say about certain things. At one point, what you were disallowed re-access to the what happened there, where you kind of got left outside at a certain point. I didn't quite follow the whole story. I figured I'd bring you on to tell it, because this is now in the past. You're out of the state now, so you know it's not something that's currently unfolding event that I might interfere with by asking you about it. But what went on there where you were denied access or you were denied re-entry to the courtroom on a certain day? What was that all about?
Yeah, that is accurate. So what happened was I had to leave around midday. I showed up in the morning as I usually did. I had to leave to go do an interview with some, I think it was with the Rundown Live in Wisconsin. And when I came back, I saw, I think it was a court security officer. I believe I initially mislabeled the person as a marshal, which there is a difference. I'd never seen this guy before, and he kind of rudely told me that because I didn't have official press credentials that I wasn't allowed in. And someone else actually, about maybe 10 minutes, not even, tried to enter the room, the courtroom, after I did. And this was a independent artist. She would go in and kind of sketch what she saw on the TV and in the court. She also got disallowed, but strangely enough, she got told a different reason, something to do with COVID and overflow protocol. And I was told it was because I was basically independent press. And that's the thing too. I actually, a week or so before that, I had the what was supposed to be the rightful spot in line to be able to get into the physical courtroom itself on the third floor in the same room as Ghislaine Maxwell. And I basically got told the same thing, like, you're not real media. And, you're not going in the courtroom, basically. So it's very arbitrary how they make these decisions. And it just, I think, is another symptom of the government's secrecy in this whole case.
Well, they knew very well that when they allowed, you know, CNN's reporter who was present there some of the time, I mean, let's be fair, you know, they of course, would strategically want those people there because, you know, what we were treated to is a reference on mainstream media where it's like, oh, and the conspiracy media people want to say that we're not covering this. We mentioned it just now. In our next story, you know, brought to you by Pfizer, of course, you know, whatever, you know, it was ridiculous. They say we're not covering it. See, we have. Now you're liars. Moving on. You know, they didn't do anything with their very highly privileged position of being in the room except give maybe 5-minute reports. Okay, literally, these people were spending more time talking to their fellow anchors on their networks about their most recent book releases than this trial on any given day. Okay, and I sample the mainstream. I make sure to. It's part of my job, the way I see it, to tell you the contrast between what happens when you're an independent media person and what these clowns are doing. So, you know, I'm talking about myself here for some stupid reason. Anyway.
No, I got you. I remember there was one week where it was just 100%, it seemed, on MSNBC coverage of Mark Meadows and his possible participation or lack thereof in the January 6th rally. And, I was just thinking, man, they spent about 30 seconds on Maxwell. And it was like nonstop, Mark Meadows.
Right, and guaranteed, one of those talking heads that you were probably looking at has a book, like, about January 6th coming out or something. You know, it's just, seriously, this is the only way book sales work, is if you can push them on your own network. Hello, I'm the author of this new book that nobody's read yet, but I assure you I'm an authority on something. You know, it's brought to you by CNN and MSNBC, or even Fox. I mean, quite honestly, it was such a thing. Anyway, look, enough with my complaints with those people. Let's get back to you. Real accurately here, you know, they're disallowing you re-entry because you're independent media. And meanwhile, they didn't even give you you know, the crow's nest seat that you could have gotten in the main courtroom, you're generally watching in an overflow room on a monitor, right? I mean, I'm not putting it down. Yep. I'm just saying this is what you had access to, right?
Yes, that is accurate. So, yeah, in that sense, it was kind of two different days that I got denied. One was to the inner courtroom where the defendant is, and the other was to the courtroom or the courthouse at large. I was not allowed to reenter. So, yeah, that is accurate.
Well, see, but here's the thing. Again, you're going to spend more than 30 seconds on it, and you don't have a book to hawk. So, you know, you don't belong in the courtroom, Addy. I'm being facetious.
I received that message loud and clear from the SDNY.
Okay. Well, anyway, you received that message loud and clear. But what, you know, and you also changed your name on Twitter, which I found interesting. I always take note of that kind of thing. But it's like not his Twitter handle. The Twitter handle that I'm going to give you in the show notes, and I'm also going to drop in the live chat room at Ocelli.com here in a minute, is completely up to date and accurate. But you changed your name on Twitter, continued your coverage though, and you continued to speak about this, and I'm sure there's more to come. So tell us what is coming up next in the saga as it unfolds in public as you know it, and what it is you're going to be covering coming up on the various platforms that you're allowed to be on, because you've been booted from here and there and everywhere, among those places that like to do that. But tell us what it is that you plan to cover regarding this case in the near future.
Yeah, so just some administrative dates coming up. Actually, tomorrow's the first one, and that's for the defense for Ghislaine Maxwell's submission of paperwork relating to requesting a motion to get a new trial or a motion for a mistrial. And then the government response will be on the 2nd. And then on the 9th of February, a week later, will be the defense allowed to respond once more. Maxwell's sentencing, as of now, is scheduled on the 28th of June. So that was another anomaly why they waited longer than usual to give the sentencing date. But we do have that. And then on the 14th, that's with regards to Prince Andrew and the Dufresne civil suit. That is the last day or the deadline to submit their names they want to call for to depose. So it's a bit of hurry up and wait right now. In that sense, there's still, you know, stuff that could happen as far as a possible mistrial. So gonna have to wait to see what that that famous courthouse says, the Thurgood Marshall courthouse there in the SDNY in Manhattan. So in the meantime, you know, I'm still digging deeper into the Maxwell Epstein network at large, you know, outside of the scope of the trial, whether it's the jurors' connections to the Carlyle group and other Epstein network members' connections there, or you know, Maxwell connections, going deeper there. But you know, just some other stuff I've been covering too is election integrity in Georgia, which is why I was here. And then later on this year, I'm going to get deeper into the Mexican drug war. And then I'm actually looking into this journalist's death right now in Florida. So, I wanted to mention this too. There's a rally for Julian Assange this Friday at 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. at the Department of Justice in Washington, D.C. So I'm going to be there. And then on Sunday, there's a protest or rally, anti-mandates is the theme there. So that's on Sunday. So I'm going to be in D.C. This weekend. So that's for the near future.
Right. Well, look, I personally have mixed feelings on the Assange issue, but don't have mixed feelings about, you know, government mandates and people being forced to do things against their will, regardless of the purpose or reasoning. I'm one of these individual freedoms should be the supreme concern when it comes to any of this. But absolutely no, I'm looking forward to that coverage. But if you don't mind, I'm going to delve backwards a little bit into this saga, because we didn't get to discuss the verdict when it came across, and I'm going to pose two questions to you. One is, you know, first of all, I'm curious if maybe there is not an anticipated mountain of motions and other hearings that maybe the public is not going to pay attention to that might precede sentencing. And is that not a possibility as to why we're in the hurry up and wait mode here on this proceeding, first of all? Second of all, the other thing is I'd like to get from you is your impressions as the verdict came down, because as I stated several times here, I am surprised a bit, not shocked, but surprised that, you know, you got 5 out of 6, I think, on the counts against her were straight up convictions. And I didn't expect that much. And frankly, I wasn't sure about whether they were going to take her straight into custody or not. You know, if you could give us those two answers. First of all, you know, about the delay, is it possible that there's going to be, you know, a flurry of paperwork coming at the court, pre-sentencing motions and different things they want to enter in? Is that not part of the possibility, some of the stuff that might not be publicly accessible? And secondly, you know, just based on what you know, if you don't know, that's fine too. But also, secondly, I'd like to go back over the verdict and get what your impressions were as that was coming down, because I have a feeling you might have been a little surprised, like I was, that it went as, well, let's call it positively, as it did, because I'm always surprised when the system appears to do, I don't know, seemingly the right thing anymore, more and more often. So if you don't mind going over those two things, I'd really appreciate it.
Yeah, of course, Mr. Archella. Yeah, it's understandable what you just said there about the system. But that's actually, I don't know if I've thought of that point before. So that's a great point you bring up. And it could explain why there was that delay in announcing the sentencing date. Perhaps the court and the judge were anticipating a possible mistrial and, you know, administrative dates that could be further pending as a result of that. You know, and I tend to defer to people who are experts in legal processes. Believe it or not, this is actually the first trial I've covered. So I think that's a great point and a strong possibility there, and it would explain that delay there. But yeah, as far as the verdict, it was slightly surprising. So you were right there. And it's kind of interesting because in one way I was very wrong and another way I was right. I was my prediction was correct in that, yes, it was a mixed verdict. However, I got the one charge I thought was going to stick is the one charge that didn't stick. And that was the enticement charge. So in that sense, I was completely wrong. But on the mixed verdict, I was right. Although I didn't officially declare it, I thought it was going to be more so like maybe 3 or 4 that would be convictions.
Right.
But 5 convictions was definitely a surprise for me. And like you said, in that sense, in this narrow prosecution, limited scope, limited hangout of a trial, it's a bit of a bittersweet victory in a way, and something that, you know, should be looked and regarded as a positive thing. But in the context of more objectivism and the big picture, it's you know, it's been described as a travesty of justice, the trial itself. So it's really relative in the way you look at it.
Well, and that's the other thing, you know, just like when you and I were talking about this while the trial was still going on, and the idea that they projected it to go to just about now as we're speaking. Right. And meanwhile, this verdict came down some weeks ago now. It came out sort of ahead of schedule because I think they anticipated more things to be offered into evidence, more testimony. I mean, they stated publicly, if you remember, we talked about, well, they're somehow signaling that they're going to have these dozens of witnesses, and they wound up with very few. The government's case was sort of whittled down for whatever reason. I don't know if it was strategic or if it was, you know, again, trying to be objective, Addy. Is it a strategic possibility where they said, look, some of this is going to become redundant and maybe we shouldn't, you know, put it all on, and then so on and so forth? Or is it, you know, the case that I really do favor, that let's try and limit how much we got to hang out here, because, again, there could be consequences to things that are offered into evidence in open court, not just in that proceeding. So that's the thing. Like, if you have a criminal conviction, it obviously bolsters, doesn't necessarily guarantee a judgment against somebody in a civil case necessarily, but it does bolster the position that, look, this person's been convicted of a criminal act that involves our client, you know, again, hypothetically. And you say, all right, well, this kind of reinforces the idea that something very, very wrong happened here. On the other hand, it doesn't mean that, like, say, let's go to the most famous case where you had a criminal acquittal and then a civil judgment, you know, in the past, I don't know, a couple of decades, which would be the O.J. Simpson verdict, where you have a not guilty in the criminal case, but a swift, you know, judgment against him pretty much when it came to the civil case afterwards. But either way, there were consequences to what happened in the criminal trial. And, you know, so I don't know. It is not the black and white A to B to C kind of explanation here. And I don't expect you to parse it all out. But the idea that that this has been kind of unusual. We saw the speed happen differently during the trial than, I don't know, seemingly everybody, including me, anticipated. Because I thought to myself, it might take longer than what they were saying if they actually paraded all the evidence through. But that's not how it actually turned out. It ended up happening quicker, weeks ahead of schedule. But, you know, was it about the court's anticipation, or was it about strategy, or was it about... I leave that to the listener's judgment more than anything, because you're going to have to look at this post-mortem and really dissect it as other events unfold, too. Because I think that might help clarify the situation. But what are your thoughts about that, though? The speed of the trial itself being faster, and yet all this space being allowed there again. And I'm just offering a possibility here. I could be entirely wrong. There could be a whole other reason for scheduling it months later, the actual sentencing. What are your general thoughts on all this?
Yeah, that's something I try to do, too, is just unpack, you know, every angle that I can and let the listener decide. But, you know, I do inform my own opinions on things when I think it's relevant. Likewise, you know, 6 weeks, I think would have been nowhere near enough time to go through all the evidence and all the witnesses that should have been, I think, admitted into court. That being said, 6 weeks didn't happen as anticipated. The trial went exactly a month. It went from the 29th of November to the 29th of December. And moreover, it was only, I want to say, 15 or so actual court days, because there were 2 weeks there, one of them being Christmas, the other being the third week, in which Judge Nathan basically didn't have a recess court for 3 days to do something to do in D.C. with her impending or incoming promotion to the Second Circuit, which is likely going to occur, it seems, which, you know, I think several reporters thought was inappropriate. So in that sense, this case could have ended even sooner. But, you know, speaking to the shortened length of it, I think that the reason for that has more to do with those limited witnesses and the limited evidence we mentioned. Right. I think it was 39,760 photos the FBI mentioned were seized at the 71st Street townhouse of Jeffrey Epstein, and just 40 were admitted into court. And, you know, of the photos that were admitted, they were mostly just pretty bland photos of bland, criminally speaking, legally speaking, of Epstein and Maxwell, right. Which, you know, I think the mainstream laps up. They like that because they can, you know, slap it on the front page, whether it's pictures of Maxwell and Epstein massaging each other, Maxwell having her cleavage hanging out. But again, I think that the length of the time really has more to do with that limited admission of witnesses on both sides. You know, 2 weeks was the case for the prosecution. And just 2 days for the defense. So the goal did seem to be on the behalf of the government to limit the information as much as possible, while still, you know, squeaking out a win, which is what they seem to do.
Well, in that way, mission accomplished. But again, it was strange that the government's case was limited to only those 2 weeks. You have your delays there for scheduling problems one way or another, whether it's a holiday or it's something else intervening. And still, it was done pretty quickly. And the defense, oddly, offered very little, which, you know, I expected. If you're going to pay some decent lawyers, you know, that they'd, I don't know, sort of tack on extra time, put on a better show, so to speak. Again, I'm not trying to minimize the impact of what it is we're studying here, but I'm just trying to look at it objectively, and I know for a fact when you hire a high-priced lawyer, they usually come up with ways to extend the amount of time that they're doing things because they're getting paid by the hour, okay? Seemed to me like they didn't really want that that courtroom paycheck because they get paid more when they're sitting in court, you know, than when they're sitting in their office and writing letters usually on that level. And I figure that the attorneys she had were not cheap, okay? So I'm just saying, I don't know. It's one of those things that seems counterintuitive, but right in front of me nonetheless. And this is the way it turned out, a lot faster. I don't know if there's been any indication as to what we might be able to expect when it comes to sentencing just yet. The attempt to have a attorney of one type or another advocate for mistrials or, well, dismissals of certain charges and things like this, this would not be odd at all. This would be normal. But for it to be spread out over such a long period of time, that's another thing. So I wonder if there is another procedure, another case that they might actually wait on or something else to develop that would be relevant to the sentencing. But again, I'm wondering aloud here. I don't have all of the facts to work with. And I dare say, you know, no disrespect to you, Addy Ads, but I'm sure that it is impossible as a singular independent reporter to have a hold of every single possibility that could be occurring here, because this case involves so many people, so many years, so much damage, so many crimes that, you know, yes. I mean, you and I would need teams of people to figure this out, really, to cover every single detail and possibility. But nonetheless, I mean, it is interesting to at least begin to discuss it. You know, maybe just maybe, not just bring on lawyers to, you know, be in the talking box on your TV show, not you, Addy, you know who I'm referring to sit there and speculate about things that they're not really going to talk about and only do it for 3 minutes because we got to get to our Pfizer commercials and also push my co-host book. You know, this is the thing. It's still a very strange situation. So we ended up getting through what I really wanted to get through a lot faster than I thought. But, you know, obviously, if there's anything I missed here, or you feel like we need to clarify, you know, let's clean it up and get to it. But I've already asked you what sure. You think is going to go on in the future, what you plan to cover. You've explained all that, you know, wonderfully. If you like, you could tell people if there's any new developments, you know, regarding the case that maybe we've missed in this discussion that people need to get, because I'm trying to really bridge the gap between you during the trial, which was great because you brought up the photographs. And I thought that that was one of the most shocking things ever, that they had this, you know, a few dozen photographs out of the thousands they could have used. And all it was, again, like you said, hey, look, here's Maxwell with Epstein. Yes, we can identify them. Let's put it into evidence. And I'm not saying that, you know, they should put graphic images of certain things out there that would be accessible to the public necessarily. But it makes you wonder of those tons and tons of photographs seized that somebody thought could be relevant evidence, if there wasn't a whole lot more that could have been offered to corroborate other things that were talked about, other possibilities, patterns of behavior. There's a whole lot of possibilities there. And you talked about that as it was happening. And I said to you, I was amazed at that, and also amazed we didn't see the video evidence that we know had to have been harvested. So, you know, still more there that might have been collected that people didn't see. But tell us what else we might have missed, if there's anything else.
Yeah, so, you know, great points. There are lots of variable change in this whole saga based on just the plethora of people involved. So quantity and the quality, the power players involved. So a couple of things I wanted to address as far as the evidence. The FBI admitted under oath, I believe it was Amanda Young, saying that they had already found, when they found this evidence, they seized from Epstein's 971st Street apartment, there were certain hard drives and items that already had FBI evidence tags and stickers on them. And that was never explained. And the FBI didn't have an explanation for that. Did Epstein bargain for those from his first arrest? Why did the FBI give them back if they seemingly had them in their possession before? Another thing I want to mention with the time thing is they could be thinking about this in a much longer time frame than you or I. You know, these sort of elites, I think they do that. They think in generations in a way that we don't, or at least a lot of us don't. And in that sense, they could simply be waiting 10 to 15 years down the line when maybe the public by then has largely forgotten about Ghislaine Maxwell, and they could release her in the middle of the night on some sort of administrative paperwork release, kind of like Miguel Caro Quintero or Rafael Caro Quintero in Mexico, this famous drug lord. He was released like that, you know, while the judge is sleeping. The evidence, the temporal kind of war of attrition, and then the lack of a call-in line. You know, this was so inaccessible, this trial was. I think it's just worth mentioning that the SDNY, Judge Nathan, they made this very hard to cover, and I just think that's wrong. I think there should be, this is a little bit of a non sequitur, maybe pontificating, but I think federal courts and federal trials should be able to be televised, which is a similar point. So,
well, yeah, that was and that, by the way, became, you know, part of the issue at the top of the trial, where it was kind of unusual that we're hearing from a judge. Well, this might be, I mean, I'm paraphrasing here, but the issues that are going to come up here might be a little too deep and dark to share directly with the public. You know, I found that really strange, because, you know, I've sat and observed other trials from a distance, whether it was, cannibal killers or, incest cases or abduction deals. I mean, all kinds of stuff. I mean, we all got to watch stuff from, like, you know, Ted Bundy. And, you know, over the years, we've seen a lot of this stuff really just spewed out to the public. And, you know, some of it is really an exploration in the most aberrant human behavior possible. I would think that in general, no, you might not want to run graphic images, you know, all day long on Sesame Street or anything. But at the same time, I don't think it was, I don't think the public needed to be protected here. It was a weird thing that went on there. So I get it, but at the same time, when you don't even enter stuff into evidence and you don't even have issues where it's like, look, we took the jury into a private room so that the public didn't need to see certain evidence and things like this, this could have gone on. There are procedures in place to do stuff like that. I in general would agree with you that if this is the system that we're paying for, and there is public access allowed, I think especially in cases that are to the public interest. I mean, I never objected to, you know, the concept of court TV. You know what I mean? Just like we have cameras in our Congress and, and in the Senate all the time. I think that since we're paying for it one way or another, you know, I think we have a right to see it. But
yes,
you know,
I agree 100%. And I'm a truther too, through and through. And it's like, I mean, these images are tough to watch, but no citizen is, you know, were these public, which I think they should be, nobody's required to look at them, right? If you don't like reading something, just read something else. But I do think the right to have that access should be there.
Yeah, no, definitely. So with all this in mind, again, I guess we got about 10 more minutes. I want you to tell people about you sort of have your own show. Actually, it was funny because you mentioned to me that maybe you might want to, I don't know, get in contact with me for something else. And you and I passed a couple of messages back and forth. But frankly, I think it's good that I waited to wrap everything around on this. It doesn't mean this will be the only thing I'm going to call on you for, though, Addy, I got to tell you. And I advise other people to follow what Addy Ads is doing. Like I said, I put those links all in the chat room at Ocelli.com, but they will be included with the show notes here from the podcast tonight. And I urge you to follow them. And by all means, guys, inform me when it's like you need to get Addy Ads back on the show to cover this because he's covering it well. Let's have another talk about it, and let's, you know, make sure we spread the word about the good work he's doing. Do that for me. Let me know, as you guys did this past time, and telling me that, yeah, you need to bring this guy back on with all the Prince Andrew stuff and with, you know, the conclusion of the trial. I'm just kind of glad I didn't jump to grab you as soon as the trial concluded because I'm sure you were busy. You've been on a lot of other spots, and, you know, pay attention to what Addy Ads is doing. That's all I got to say. Independent journalist, oh, wow. You can support them yourself. And like I said, all the links are there in the show notes and in the Ocelli.com chat room. So anyway, anything you want to tell us about, you know, what you're doing on Rockfin and some of the other platforms, or if there's new developments in any way, shape, or form there, go right ahead.
Awesome. Yeah, thank you, Mr. Ocelli. And anytime you want me on the show, please feel free to give me a ring, and I'll do my best to make it. It's a great opportunity, and I want to thank you again for it. But yeah, for video, Rockfin is where I'm sending people. Rockfin is rokfin.com, and that's / Addy Ads. If you just type in Addy Ads, ADDYADDS, into your favorite search engine, that should pop up. Twitter is a good spot to get daily updates, as well as Telegram. And both of those are One Addy Ads, One spelled out, ONEADDYADDS. And yeah, as far as my website, that's just addyads.one, also spelled out. So, you know, I'm on other video platforms as well, but I'm really trying to centralize a bit my video content on Rockfin. And my broadcasts, I generally, almost without exception, put the audio onto my podcast, which is Public Intelligence. And if you just type in Addy Ads onto your favorite podcast app, that should pop up as well as my two other podcasts, which are the Epstein Files and then the Julian Assange podcast, which I just try to do some general updates and analysis of commentary and news on Assange. And then the Epstein Files is basically all things Jeffrey Epstein, Ghislaine Maxwell, and anything related, including Prince Andrew. So those are, you know, kind of what I cover pretty regularly. And on the back burner, as I mentioned, is my Mexican drug war coverage, which I've been doing a bit as well last year. But I'm going to pick that up more in full force later this year. So people can be on the lookout for that. So yeah, if people want to share my Telegram out and my Twitter out, that'd be great. Telegram's a great spot because they tend to not censor, likewise with Rockfin, but definitely need the support. And, you know, anything people can help with as far as sharing content or otherwise, I'm much appreciated.
Right. And I'm just specifically putting the Rockfin link into the chat room there. Now, some of my listeners I do know prefer BitChute, and Addy Ads is on BitChute also. You'll have the link, and the links to all the stuff that he just mentioned will be in the show notes and are already in the chat room at Ocelli.com. So just to recap, and by the way, don't just put on the back burner that I am one of these people that's very keen about talking about the drug war. I just got back in touch with Celi Castillo, which I'm going to bring him back on the show. He hasn't been on my show in a couple of years. But I'm going to bring him back on the show. And I know you know who Celi Castillo is, right?
Yes, yeah. I've actually recently discovered him. I'm not as deep in his work as I would like to be. But, yeah, I actually have a couple people who I want to study up on before I get deeper into my next phase of covering that, which I'm going to kind of talk about publicly later this year.
Okay, fair enough. I'll let you save it. But when you're ready, sure. Do keep Ocelli in mind, because this is one of these things that that I'm always more than happy to talk about when it comes to revealing the truth. I have very proudly interviewed Doug Valentine about this. I've very proudly talked to John Potash about this. Certainly, I've discussed things on my own about this. Freeway Ricky Ross has been on this show. Selly's been on this show.
Oh, wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, this is one of my areas of interest, because it is one of the grandest illusions that has ever been pulled over the eyes of the American people, is this whole concept of the drug war, and how, you know, oh, it's about street dealers and it's about these terrible people in poor neighborhoods. I got news for you. It's part of a program. And, yes. You know, it's not news to me, because unfortunately, sadly, I lived part of my life well engaged in the trenches as a kid. And, well, even later on, I got touched by it. But the truth is that this is one of those things that, whether you recognize it or not, is absolutely rotting the core of this country in a way. And you really need to think about who's actually responsible for it. Anyway, Addy, as you dig into it, my friend, I look forward to seeing where you go. And we'll support any work like that you do just automatically. The exploration alone is worthy of consideration and is sorely lacking in coverage from independent media. Although they go through time periods where they cover it, it's sorely undercovered, in my estimation. Yeah. You have something to say there?
Yeah. No, I agree. I was going to say I agree wholeheartedly. That's, it's arguably been more violent than the Middle East over the past 15 years there, even statistically. So, it's like you said, it's really a duping, you know, when all you hear about these wars in Syria and the Middle East, which are bad and terrible, and then you have this this country and that's in societal decay and a borderline civil war, and nobody's really talking about it.
Well, that's because, you know, in the Middle East, we have a boogeyman that we're going after, right? And,
exactly.
You know, and that's the thing is, rah-rah America, wave your flags, even if they're made in China, wave them around, because this is the enemy over there. But what people don't realize is the war on drugs is a misnomer. The drugs are not the enemy. You are.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I mean, you can take the approved stuff that is absolutely taxable, marketable, and profitable for the government directly. When it comes to, you know, when you buy your OxyContin and whatever other opioid, whatever it is they want to call it, and all the other drugs, I mean, that's all good. Doesn't matter what it really does to you. That's okay. You can take the approved drugs, but, you know, do the wrong thing, run afoul of the taxation system. Oh my, maybe even pick up on the cheap stuff that they've been importing as part of a greater strategy to destroy Central and South America or other regions on the planet somewhere else. That is a no-no. Except it is part of the equation where you are a necessary, I don't know how I tripped over that word, necessary part of the boogeyman superstructure. You, the American people. Anyways, I know you and I will have much to discuss as you dig deeper into it. So looking forward to that. But meanwhile, you can keep track of, like he said, he's got the one podcast where it's all things, all things Epstein Maxwell, and a variety of other stuff. So you are keeping busy. You're putting out a lot of content. And again, endorsement from me, whatever that means. I appreciate the independent journalism. I appreciate the effort. I appreciate the fact that, you're out there fighting the good fight, and I want you to keep doing it. So any way I can encourage you, I will do so. Who knows? Maybe we're going to get maybe we'll get some Addy Ads books out there, too. That'll happen at some point, but first you got to maybe slow down a little on the journalism, and I'm not going to encourage you to do that. So when you get a little older, you can write about your adventures and how they went. How about that?
Yeah. I actually I do have one book out, but I want to get the second edition out pretty soon here, so people can be on the lookout for that. And I'm looking forward to it. I really am looking forward to getting real deep into the Mexican drug war and the drug war in general. So and it does mean a lot, Mr. Ochella. I do appreciate it, sir, because you know it's not something you always get, and it's not something people always have to do. So it doesn't go underappreciated or unnoticed. So thank you, and I'm sure the audience is thankful as well.
Absolutely, my friend. Look, I'm just grateful that there's guys like you out there still able to do what you're doing. And I don't know if that, I got to be honest with you, I'm so pessimistic about the future. I don't know if that'll continue. But in the meantime, while Ads is out there fighting the good fight, and, you know, before everything's on lockdown, go ahead and follow him on Twitter, Telegram, everything, all the list I gave you, man. Support him. Follow him, check out his work. It's worth it. The Ochella Effect will return after this.
WallStreetWindow.com. Gold, silver, the stock market. WallStreetWindow.com.
Perhaps you're invested deeply.
Perhaps you're not in deep enough. Maybe you're thinking about getting started. WallStreetWindow.com. Michael Swanson, the brilliant author of The War State, understood these trends professionally for many years, and now he gives you the benefit of his knowledge. WallStreetWindow.com. Go there now.
When a fan of the Ochella Effect calls in to the Ochella Effect.
I just wanted to call in and tell you and Michael Swanson and JP Sicilian and all of the guests that you have how much I love your show. Always interesting. It's always informative. I just wanted to tell you in person on the phone. I mean, I love you. I love your show. I love everything you do. I will always be there to support you. You know that.
We appreciate you so much. You have okay. No idea.
Thanks. And most of our fans just send hate mail and death threats.
Ochella.com.
Do you like history? Real history that you were never taught in schools?
Why? The Vietnam War, nuclear bombs and nation building in Southeast Asia.
By author Mike Swanson, with new documentation never seen before that'll open your eyes to events that led up to this.
Why? The Vietnam War, nuclear bombs and nation building in Southeast Asia, 1945 through 1961.
Get your copy today at Amazon.com.
Why? The Vietnam War
by author Mike Swanson.
This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com, and you're listening to the Ochella Effect at Ochella.com.
Go ahead, caller.
Hey, I'm interested in the truth about the JFK assassination.
Right. Well, what do you want to know?
Judy Baker's wild claim, Oswald girlfriend, he knew Ruby and Barry, cancer weapons. Really?
I imagine I could claim I have four wheels. It doesn't make me a wagon, but okay.
Oswald was on the kill team and trying to prevent the murder of John Kennedy. Come on now. Has a real expert on the JFK assassination look into her claims?
Go to Amazon.com. Enter Judith Baker in her own words. You'll get results for a digital copy of a book where Walt Brown utilizes her own words and the known evidence in the case to get at, well, a different perspective, let's say. You can get Judith Barry Baker in her own words from the author himself, signed if you request it, by contacting Dr. Brown at KIASJFK@AOL.com. It's a fun book, and it actually dissects the many fantastic claims. Judith Barry Baker in her own words.
Thank you for all the great information.